after Rachel Simon's awesome episode of building an employee engagement LinkedIn program, the community stuck around and kicked around some frameworks that's been working for folks on how to get started, how to put kind of like the guardrails around it. And it ended up being really good. We talked about using StoryBrand for it. We talked how Jessica has seen her clients implement it. Just a ton of really, really practical value here. So we wanted to publish it from the Relationship Driven Growth open mic that happens immediately after our episodes on Mondays. And I do this to invite you to come to one of these, be part of the conversation, be part of the content. We give everybody a content gift, but I'm going to leave you with these frameworks for building employee engagement on LinkedIn and a couple other things. Enjoy.
If you know how it is, then you know how it might be. But think what it would look like if you grow your own community. It ain't easy. That's why you're listening to hear experiences from others just like you and me. Welcome to the B2B Community Builder Podcast, a show that was started because if you can unlock the power of having a community around your business, then you will create a source of referrals, validation, marketing content, and product feedback that will be unbeatable. But who has time to think about building a community when you need to be making sure that your team has what it needs to succeed in serving clients and bringing in revenue? That is why we'll be talking to business leaders like you and I that have cracked the code on why the community play is so valuable, how to implement tactics that got them there while still serving short-term goals, and what they can teach you that they have mastered. This show is for you if you are a CEO, CMO, or simply a rainmaker that has realized that without a community, you are just a commodity, but haven't figured out how to add it to your infinite list of priorities. This show is for you if you are a community professional or trying to be a community professional that is trying to convince leadership about the need to invest in a community strategy. This show is not for you if you think transactions are more valuable than relationships. I am your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez, co-founder of BeTheStage.live, a marketing company that specializes in relationship-driven growth. I invented the relationship flywheel, and hopefully I'm your new best friend. So smash that subscribe button, leave a rating when you do, and get ready to plug into the power of community creation for business development. Let's go.
We have a client that is the president of a healthcare company. And so he's one of, let's say, 10 companies under a big umbrella. And so then he has about 280 employees under him. And so how do they show up on LinkedIn? Because everything's out there. So how do they show up in a way that is right for their role? Rachel was talking about marketing, sales. So this company's done a whole rebrand, but I don't think they've taken it to the next step. They did do some LinkedIn training with one of our people, but they need to take it to the next step of, okay, out of the salespeople, these two people are the most, they're already naturally going to talk. Yep. Then let's give them either a rhythm or some things that they should be intentionally doing. Yeah.
I have a thought here.
Yeah, please.
I've said for a long time that it's scary for a boss to let their employees even out of the building to consider what they're going to be saying about the company, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't very clearly define the central thing that you're about, you're in deep trouble. And we talk about it as, what is the problem, solution, the outcome that your company solves for your clients? The problem I fix for people is that they aren't clear on their brand messaging. The solution is through brand messaging guides. And the outcome is that they can actually attract the audience that they want. Well, when Donald Miller was starting StoryBrand, I've heard this is like a legend in the StoryBrand world, but apparently he would walk around with money in his pocket and he would just stop random employees and say, what's our company one-liner? And if they could say it verbatim on the spot, he'd give them a little bonus. And that to me speaks real volumes because I tell my clients all the time, like our one-liners that I write for you, those should be on your LinkedIn profile. But if you have a team, the whole team needs to know that one-liner because it becomes the defining, becomes the safe zone, right? It becomes guardrails on what people can do. So this is a very interesting conversation. I hadn't thought about it so much in terms of teams on LinkedIn, but I certainly talked about it in terms of teams outside of the workplace, and what are they telling their friends and relatives about what they do and that kind of thing?
I would assume that all great frameworks, which StoryBrand is, it gives you a framework for everything, right? If the whole team is educated on who the villain is and what the extrinsic, intrinsic, and philosophical needs are, and all the different like beautiful prompts that StoryBrand give you, I think that's a really great place to start. Of just, Jessica, to your question, prompts for what to talk about, right? So, hey, talk about the villain once a week, or talk about the extrinsic need, intrinsic need, or like philosophical need, and do those kinds of things. Feels like a great, I don't know how to say it. I guess it would be a good extending the lifetime value of whatever investment you've made in branding and messaging to dust off the old like deliverable that they gave you and to repurpose it into LinkedIn prompts for people to let breathe. I would assume is one of them. The thing that I've seen work best is for the leader to model the behavior. I think you can't say enough for the idea that if this is a gentleman, this gentleman starts going out there and starts posting on LinkedIn and starts liking or commenting on whomever in his organization is posting or commenting on LinkedIn, I would say that's going to really entice people to do it, right? The idea that your CEO is acknowledging anything, especially like CEO of conglomerate that owns multiple companies, I would assume that would be a really nice carrot. And as far as sticks go, to me, it just feels, okay, stay away from this stuff or stay away from that stuff, right? If you're gonna do something, try to avoid whatever, right? I think it's pretty easy to like define out of bounds. And then beyond that, less easy and less obvious is the idea that when somebody steps out of bounds, if you want people to continue trying, do not overcorrect, right? So just keeping in mind that mistakes will be made. Price that into it, make the out of bounds as clear as you can, and don't freak out publicly when somebody does it, because it's inevitably going to happen or else you're going to kill the program.
A couple things. We give people counsel, not to the deep dive that Rachel is. We have had some people post things that we felt like were not aligned with their brand. Maybe there was a cuss word used or just something that didn't match, but we are calling them on the phone.
Yeah.
Having that super one-on-one. And they don't have to take it down, but we're giving them our counsel.
Yeah.
I could share my screen and show you this person's profile, because this is just a really cool example.
Cool.
So this is the person that's the president of the healthcare company here in Atlanta under the Jackson Health. It's a $2.5 billion private company, but he's one of those divisions, right?
Yeah.
So what's really great is he does have his title here, like Rachel was saying. He is the president. So we're going to put that in his title, but he's not a big show off. He doesn't really want to. This was a lot to get him to this point.
Yeah.
But then this is neat. Let me just show you the about section. We got him to tell more of his personal story because he's had failures. He didn't make it in the Air Force Academy, but he's worn the shoes of all the people that work under him now. He's done some extraordinary things with how he onboarded people. For 3 months before COVID, he sat down with every single employee for 30-minute increments from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. He wouldn't make one decision until he met every single person. So let me show you how he does LinkedIn. And this is what's so funny. He doesn't care what the rules are. He likes to celebrate people. Okay. So he has started putting a few leadership things, but this is his favorite thing to do. He is bragging about these people that have been promoted in the company.
It's great.
So some people say, oh my gosh, you're going to get poached. They're going to get taken. And he said, that's no reason to not celebrate our company. We've had the lowest turnover. We have this, we have that. Like, he's confident in the company and the people, but they should be celebrated. Yeah. Now, he said the reason behind this is not the reason, but something he found out is all the people that this person went to school with, they're noticing her, the parents. That's actually a good recruiting tool.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it for that reason. He really just wanted to celebrate him. And sometimes he might post 3 a day. It's against all the LinkedIn rules. And so he has some CEOs calling saying, you're crazy. And then others said, I love what you're doing. It's encouraged me. So now all the people under him are, like you said, following the leader and celebrating people. So
I love that. I love that. And listen, I know that you showed up a little bit later to the interview portion, but we started with that idea of being the stage for your employees, and that psychology of the kingmaker, as opposed to trying to just stay king all the time, is super valuable. Yeah. Specifically speaking towards how this will attract Gen Z talent, right? Like that young woman that you just showed, clearly a younger person in their career, right. When her friends see, oh my God, the CEO just posted you. You must work in an awesome place. How do I get a job there? You can't put a price on that. That's so valuable. Even if she goes off and works for another healthcare system in a year, just the exposure to like her most talented friends immediately has got to be worth tenfold.
And the experts will say that kind of post should come from the company. But he says, I don't care. He said, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. And so I think sometimes you have like best practices, and sometimes part of our job is figuring out how to walk alongside these leaders that matches their personality and their makeup and extracting their gifts and talents.
I love that. Tom, yeah. You had some?
I was just thinking that was so amazing. It reminds me of you. They Ask, You Answer by Marcus Sheridan, where they would actually promote their competition. They even invented awards to promote their competition. Because what would happen is when people were Googling their competition, they'd be ending up on Sheridan's website. And to me, it speaks of such an abundance mindset. I hate it when people just live in fear. I can't imagine never being bragged on. Being publicly recognized, that would only make me more loyal to my company, not less. I don't know. I don't believe in living with a scarcity mindset. I love celebrating people. I believe this is obviously a monster company. But I don't know. I just have to believe that if you have somebody said the other day, people don't quit their job, they quit their leader.
Yeah.
So if you're a fantastic leader, like that isn't a shame to even put you on LinkedIn. It's incredible.
Yeah. Tom, I don't know if you're familiar with like category design and the book Play Bigger behind me and stuff like that, but from a category design lens, the idea of expanding the umbrella and evangelizing the problem and really just trying to grow the market share by evangelizing everybody that's doing a good job in the space has been shown to be a great strategy, because the more, you know, if instead of promoting the solution, you promote the problem, right? The person who is known to define the problem the best will be known to have the solution. And if you then do that and promote that, then that person ends up becoming the category king or queen of the space and ends up running away with 76% of the market share. But so their only option is to continue to grow market share, right? To promote the space and promote the other people. And I think, Jessica, I mean, Sangram is somebody that's done that incredibly well, right? Like when he was launching the ABM category, he was out there inviting his competitors to his roadshows and creating ABM awards and doing all this stuff that would highlight the category and highlight the problem that they were solving. And last I checked, I think he did pretty good with that.
Also, if you subscribe to his newsletter, he's telling people what he learned.
Yeah.
But he's here in Atlanta, so we get to see him a lot, but he really is that way. And we don't own things. All boats rise. I'm open-handed. It's contagious to all the other people around you. And I think it creates a spirit of collaboration in your team.
Yep.
Instead of, you know, how a lot of salespeople are that they own this and all that.
Yeah, I'm actually reading this. It's a book called New Power. And it essentially talks about this is a big shift in the world, right? Like I've heard Brené Brown talk about this, about we are moving from a power over economy to a power with economy, right? She talks about it as in like world and societal structures, right? Like as long as we were around, as long as humanity's existed, we've operated under this idea that if you have this advantage, you keep it to yourself and you hold it over people, and that's how you win. Yeah. And now that we're in a world of like free information exchange, you just can't do that anymore, right? That power that you hold is a short-term advantage. And really, the way that I like to put it is, in a world where knowledge moves so freely and information moves so quickly and is so prevalent, a piece of knowledge, like an advantage of knowledge that you hold to yourself, is a diminishing asset, while like sharing your knowledge is a compounding asset. If you're out there just trying to develop the knowledge and continue to like share it with people and have them iterate on it and then continue to like rework it, operating under any other premise is just a false premise. And that's actually what this whole book is about. It's all the dynamics of this new power world of power with and how you see it across different things from political movements to companies and stuff like that. It's really interesting. I haven't read enough of it to then synthesize it and then bring it to the show, but it's funny that it brings up now, like I'm on it right now and we're talking about it.
All right. I'm trying to block my sign.
It's so bright. I thought it was some sweet poster that you put together.
Incredible infographic you just have handy there.
Here's the four pillars of power.
Four speakers that we were promoting.
That's cool.
Okay, so here's an idea. We gave away information when we gave a talk recently. In preparing for the talk, it forced you to have a timeline and a deadline.
Forcing function.
Figuring out what you're and then when I gave the talk, I did practice it with some people online. I went to a church where we have some friends and practiced with their marketing team, got feedback. And then you figure out, go with this story. Don't go with that.
Yep.
And then I have my mom's cookbook, but I still need my mom to really talk me through the recipes. So
yeah,
we know there's not really, what does the Bible say? There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
So you might as well. Now, one post I'm working on right now, because I want to write it well, is I want to thank people that helped us get to this event. So I'm trying to figure out, I walked an inch in the speaker's shoes, because normally we are not the speaker, but no one gets there alone. And so right now what I'm doing, like a little draft of, let's say, six people of how did we get to that stage? And it was someone that's a stylist, someone that did the slides, someone that's a Dale Carnegie coach, people that let me just practice on them, right? I think the best people do practice, right? You don't show up to be Michael Jordan by sitting around and watching other good people.
Yeah.
You go. You put yourself out there.
Listen, the last four keynotes that I've done,
yes,
this is something that I've uncovered. I do it on my show live the week before. And I make it like a, hey, special edition of whatever. I'm going to just give a preview to my keynote. Normally they're like 20, 30 minutes. So like I do the keynote, I get feedback for 30 minutes, and then we roll into like open mic session. But to me, that's another thing, right? If you're not going to be at this event, number one, I never go to watch speakers at events because I'm networking, right? So whatever the content is going to be at the end of the day, that content's going to be out there in the ecosystem. You're going to be able to figure it out later. So I'm always networking. So anything that you can do to decrease the friction between like people seeing the content that you're going to put out, I think is good. Anything that you do that allows you to get feedback from your target audience ahead of time from like prime time, I think it's great. And beyond that, it just provides another premiere experience, right? If you're promoting I have a guest on my show, or sneak peek of keynote I'm giving, tends to perform really well on people showing up from my email list. So I love that.
That's a great way to word it.
Yeah, you sneak peek. You can do a LinkedIn Live and do it, right? Like you're not, whoever's going to go to that conference was already either going to go to that conference or not go to that conference. And if somebody was going to go to that conference and they saw your thing on LinkedIn and then decided not to show up to your session, you just did them a favor to allow them to go network, and they got the thing that you were going to go do.
That's good.
Yeah. It took a while to get to the trade show stuff. You had a lot of guided tour of LinkedIn stuff that Rachel did. And the interesting thing that I would have to align myself with is that I do find myself in the position of having to defend the value proposition of LinkedIn these days. I go through a lot of multi-tiered decision-making at companies. Companies are very tough to greenlight LinkedIn training these days. They have other priorities. And the last thing they want is someone like me to get a hold of their key people and try to buff up their profiles in a way that makes them poachable. So it becomes a bit of a tough sell at times. It really does. Now, I've done lunch and learns, but to get in and do real internal development on employees regarding LinkedIn, those engagements are few and far between. I've got several of them. They're at the top of my client list, and I go all out. They are priority clients for me, because the stakes are high, and the last thing I need is a conflict of interest. I'm trying to unify teams on LinkedIn at a time when employers are trying to retain them, keep them engaged. Many of them are working in the hybrid space. So they've got half in the office, half scattered across the United States. How do you use LinkedIn to keep everybody aligned? It's very challenging and much more complex than it used to be.
Makes sense, man.
Yeah. I didn't realize I've heard the idea that, yeah, why would I want my employees posting on it? I didn't realize how that then makes it a harder sell for your services. So I guess if I'm, there's so much value in it for everybody involved.
Right.
The key decision maker doesn't want to invest in the value. Sounds to me that if we're going to take it back to the trade show conversation, then this increases the opportunity for having someone like yourself at a trade show or someone like Rachel at a trade show, either inside your own trade show booth, helping other people, or in, or as the trade show organizer, hiring someone like yourself, like they did at Exhibitor Live, to come in, give a keynote, and then roam around and give people LinkedIn advice like the Genie and Big.
Go one step deeper and wider on that, Pab. And that would be to have someone at the booth who's managing LinkedIn right there at the point of connection for people building the community right at their booth. So if you look at the booth as a real-time community build, the people who come to the booth throw their business card in the fishbowl for some kind of drawing, which you know is just to get on the mailing list, and then maybe snab a couple of Snickers fun size before they leave the booth, you now have people who could actually be front and center with someone, actually accelerating LinkedIn at the point of connection right there.
So what is that?
I'm just thinking
like
of this now. It's the first time anybody has thought of it.
Yeah.
And I'd like to thank the Academy.
What would that look like, JD? Would that be a, hey, follow our company page? Would that be a, let me take a picture with you and post it on our LinkedIn and tag you?
Like, it could be. Let's predict the future. And I know the folks are not privy to what we're doing in Louisville next week, but you're going with a client. I'm a speaker at the event. Serendipitously, you're there. We found out each other was there. Now we've co-conspirated to do some really high-end content creation there. And then you have these vendors at booths. And for your particular client, your client can have, say, if I'm there doing LinkedIn, if I'm representing technically your client, but at the same time, giving LinkedIn tutorials for how to keep a conversation moving forward after an event. Because if you've been to enough of these trade shows, you know that you're looking at 2 to 3 days minimum of follow-up after you come home. It's going to take you out of your game right when you come home, because then you got to go through everything. You got to triage all the important relationships you've developed there and bubble them up to the top and say, who am I going to follow up with right away? Who can wait? Who may not pan out to be anything, but you, there's a certain time sensitivity in dealing with those relationships right when you get home that could be managed more effectively right at the booth.
How do you do that?
I don't know. I'm going to find out in Louisville next week.
Okay.
I'm going to improvise the whole thing. I have no idea.
Okay.
But I'm going to make it happen. And I'm going to make it happen for Pablo. I'm going to give him the glory because he's inviting me to participate in some content creation as a joint branded vehicle to let folks on in my LinkedIn tribe know that I'm at this thing. B, that I've hooked up with a guy who's a BFF from the early days of the pandemic when I connected with Pablo. And now, and Pablo has an improv background, we're going to do some really cool things that nobody's
ever seen. What are you guys going to be like in the aisle? What someone's
well, he's got an event. He booked a place, Pablo.
We're doing a couple of things. One is we are, so the night before, right? I feel like you were there for when we first shared this, right? So the night before, I operate under the assumption that everybody that's going to a conference really wants to make 3 or 4 friends the night before, so that when they're in this like sea of humanity, they have familiar faces to look at.
Right.
So we rented out like the side room of a brewery within walking distance of the main hotel. And JD and I are doing what is the unofficial conference kickoff icebreaker, where I'm going to do 10 minutes of content about networking at a trade show. JD is going to do 10 minutes of content about using LinkedIn at a trade show. And then we're going to run a couple of like improv scenarios of person walking up to a booth and like facilitating a conversation and like working through that. And we're going to have, we got a camera guy that's there. That's going to like video the stuff. We're paying for a bar tab, right? It's like a $500 investment for my client. We made a flyer for it so that people can like distribute it and come to it. And if we get 10 to 20 people there the night before, that's a huge win for a very low cost in comparison to like the compounding effect that's going to have over the next 3 days at the conference. Then JD is speaking on Tuesday morning. But we have Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we set up a really nice podcast, like activation studio inside my client's trade show booth, where we're going to be running his show, Event Marketing Redefined. And we have sent out a couple of like key invites for folks that we have slotted for like the first morning. JD is one of them. He's going to come in and be interviewed for the podcast in front of everybody else. And then that allows for my client's sales team to be out on the show floor and say, oh man, that was really interesting that you just said. You want to come be on our special edition of the podcast that we're doing here about Exhibitor Live, and then bring them back and provide this experience for key relationships that they're forming. And while they're there, JD is going to be hanging around, who is a keynote speaker with the same cachet and giving people LinkedIn advice impromptu, just as part of the entourage. Then he's going to speak on Tuesday morning. That's going to be a wonderful moment for him. Like, he gets the opportunity to A, build momentum for people to come see his talk. Then he speaks, and then he's going to be walking around a celebrity because he just spoke, and people are going to walk up to him inside of him, and him hanging around our booth is a win-win for everybody in the sense of just like co-branding and like sharing the stage and being guilty by association with each other. So that's what we have planned. And then I think JD is going to, as we are speaking, he is improvising what his next keynote at the next event is going to be, which is LinkedIn as a CRM.
True.
While at a conference.
True. Well, the interesting thing is, and I just thought of this because the ideas come faster than I can contain them usually. And that is that if I'm announcing for people who want to get a hold of me after my talk, I'm typically, sometimes people don't feel comfortable voicing an opinion or getting their questions answered in a group setting. So they would come up and see me afterwards. And I would say to people, hey, look, if you'd like to continue the dialogue with me, I'll be at your vendor's booth. Wonderful. Pablo, yep. Who is it?
So Rockway Events.
Rockway Events. So the win scenarios at this thing are immense, and they're discoverable in real time. I don't know what's at the other end. That's what makes me the guy I am. I'm highly improvisational. I will create on the fly. So, and that's why when Rachel is going through regimented stuff as to what to do on a trade show, I think these are things that are being done right now. Going right to LinkedIn, bypassing the whole business card thing, connecting right there on the spot on your mobile phones. That's basic stuff. But the real high stuff, the real stuff that tees you up for a good post-conference conversation is some of these other accelerating pieces, like booth time well spent, talking about making the connection on LinkedIn, looking at the company right there and seeing, evaluating B2B pathways. Right. Yeah. There in the presence of the decision makers. That's the beauty of the trade show. But getting people into that level of comfort sometimes can be tough.
And JD, speaking of just like improvising right through this, right? Like it was serendipitous that you got chosen as a keynote speaker and that I'm doing this activation, right? But if I'm somebody that isn't part of this serendipity right now, I'm thinking, okay, how can I, you know who the keynote speakers are going into trade shows. We've just identified a couple of synergies of ways you can leverage the keynote speakers' instant fame of what's happening in that moment, right? It revolves around having impromptu events where you make them like part star, having content to create that can perpetuate whatever they're doing, offering them like a stadium at your booth, setting up some kind of like strategic relationship. At the next conference that I'm going to, if I don't have a BFF from Zoom days of the pandemic, I'm going to do the same exact thing. I'm going to look up keynote speakers. And I'm going to say, hey, I've got a camera crew. What can I produce for you? And how can we work together on having a happy hour on the side that you're the host of? Or I'm going to say, hey, we got a booth. If you want somewhere to hang out, we can feature you here and make some space for you to like create connections after your keynote. I think, and I'm saying this all now to you, Jessica and Tom, of just like how I would be thinking about what we are doing and how you can apply it universally.
I think it comes under the general heading of, and what we're going to be doing, and yourself included, because you're going to be the guy walking around with the camera crew. So your profile is going to be elevated. And it,
I'm going to be true Hollywood story out here, baby.
Three-day profile elevation, which is something we could talk about at the event Sunday night. How do you come to a trade show and not just try to bust a quota and meet X people per hour at the trade show? Because traffic on those floors, I've been in enough of those things to know that it's the give and take. It's the battle. The guys that want you to come into their booth and then people who are walking away because they don't want to be sold something, or they're just not interested in developing a relationship. They take a look at the booth. they say, nice fixtures, and they just pass on by. So now you're really bypassing this whole, who can I meet type of mindset into a, how can I elevate my profile mindset? What can I do in 3 days, given the whole time on the expo floor, in the breakout rooms, at the bar at night, on these field trips? The conference is providing some incredible opportunities for people. And there's going to be like 5,700, there are 5,700 people registered. Yeah. So it's like maneuvering your way through a small town during 4th of July weekend.
Yeah. I'd love to get
but enough Tom about you. Let's talk about me.
Yeah. Well, you guys, I just pulled something up that I use. If you're in the sports world, you're familiar with scouting reports.
Sure.
So one of the things I like to do is think ahead before I show up at the trade show. And I do this for a lot of times, it's been a speaking event. So I'm going to, let me pull up my thing and make sure I'm sharing the right screen.
Jessica, I love that you've shown up with stuff to share, like screen share and everything. I love it.
If you've got the pictures, you might as well show it. Okay. All right. So I put this spreadsheet together and I'm listing out the names of the speakers, their LinkedIn, a link to their website, and then info, intel. Okay. So if we had, this was called the Pendulum Summit. It was in New York. And one of our speakers was so young, he didn't know that Steve Forbes had run for president twice, right?
Yeah.
So I know my speaker and I'm trying to figure out where is his point of connection. If he's like on the elevator with these people, this started because there was a dinner just for speakers and they were bumping out the handlers. So we weren't going to be able to be there to tell him things. By the way, this younger speaker, Steve Forbes, he's connected to Ronald Reagan, connected to Sloan Kettering. This is what he cares about politically. Anyway, we went through all this.
Yeah.
And with another guy that went to something, he was going to a Christian conference. I knew that my guy was a black belt and I knew him, certain things about him. I said, by the way, this guy went to this college and this guy owns this company and this guy is also a black belt. So that makes his networking more intentional. And that he's taken the time to get to know who it is. But if he has 30 seconds with them, make the best of it.
Yeah, super smart. Super smart.
Jessica, who are you providing that information for? Was that for yourself or for a client?
That particular one was for a client a few years ago.
That's really good, Jessica. Really
good. He was one of the speakers, but he was 22 years old. And the rest of these people are 40 plus. He knew a lot
about super old.
Right. I have college age kids. He was old enough to be my kid.
Yeah. So do I.
But I like to serve people that way, especially if I'm not going to be there, because I want them, a lot of them are not natural networkers or people, but they really great at what they do. And so I want to take off the burden of some of these things. So like, I know what they're, we just had to buy 2 6-packs of Diet Coke for a client at the conference in Chicago. This other person was Coke Zero. It was a Pepsi hotel. So it's not like the rock stars, but it is, how can you serve them? Because the speaking is hard, even if you're great at it. I want them to show up and be great.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to know that something didn't happen or one person has a radio show and we had to run around because it didn't have the Ethernet connection. And then you have some things to give people as a thank you. I keep candy bars and things with me.
Tom, what business are you in? What do you do?
You know what? I was a pastor for 19 years.
Okay.
And October 1st, 2020, I left ministry and started a business. So I certified as a story brand guide.
Oh,
okay.
And story brand has been fabulous. So I'm a copywriter and content strategist.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And you have nice eyewear of your own.
Thank you. I'm just about to change it. So I'm always looking at people's eyewear.
Okay.
But no, I've had incredible 2.5 years, just absolutely incredible. I had this little feeling that I work with smaller clients than maybe your clientele. You're talking about some pretty big.
Jessica's working with some big deal people. I think the rest of
them. Yeah, she's the one to know. I really need to start sucking up to her at this point.
No, I have people of all kinds. They're amazing. Some of them just aren't known yet.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Welcome to the video screen, Kay. Good to have you. How's the last time Kay was here? She was starting to negotiate sponsorship deals for her podcast. Any updates there?
Yes, thanks for having me again. I actually just recently got an affiliate with a local health and wellness supplement company, and we're going to be doing a 5-part podcast series on, I'm getting full treatment from the physician, full lab work, and a complete health revitalization. And we're going to document the entire thing. So I'm pretty excited about that campaign. We're going to be rolling that out next week and then going into, it's about a 6-month process. And then we're going to be launching episodes coming up later this summer. So
Yeah,
it's been good. I just have to put myself out there more. I'm really new to the side of things, and it's been a lot of fun to just get feedback like this and be part of groups like this to help fuel me forward.
That's awesome. That's awesome. When Kay came, maybe about a month ago, something like that. And she was just talking about, she's starting to gain some traction in her podcast, doesn't have a massive audience yet. So was looking for some guidance on sponsorship deals and how to monetize. And the advice was, when you don't have that really big audience, the economics aren't really about your audience size as much as, does the person like you, can the content itself be the product, right? You're more selling yourself and your personality, and you're vouching for it more so than like clicks per million or whatever we're doing. So it sounds like somebody heard you out.
Yeah, it's going well. Thank you.
Love it. Love it. Very cool. Anything new for us today, or are you just showing up to hang out?
I caught the email and I thought I'd pop on and see if everyone, like what the conversation was. And yeah, I've got some new things in the works, and I heard the word improv, and that's something, I have a background in improv and
really
I love it. Yeah. Just like a little bit here and there as a hobby, but I love it. I love it because I don't have to memorize any lines. I can just roll with the energy that's going on.
That's cool. Love it. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Tom, you know what I'm curious about, man, as a past preacher. So one of the things that I'm most, and I think it's actually, so next week there won't be a show because JD and I are going to be in Louisville doing this thing. But the week following that, I'm having Ethan Butte on, who is the chief evangelist for BombBomb. And the rise of the evangelist as a business function is something that I'm super into for a couple of reasons. One, I think it makes sense, right? I think we've all been talking here about the idea that we're in this human to human world, right? It's not even B2B anymore or B2C or whatever. And we're actually having the author of the guy that started the human to human movement coming on in a couple of weeks. But, and having people that evangelize the problem and help people understand it better and add value to the ecosystem is a big part of category design. Also, as a completely self-interest play, I find that my core skill set is being an evangelist. So I want to promote the idea that people that can evangelize stuff are a worthy investment, either at a fractional level or as a career path or anything like that. And I wonder, in your background as a preacher,
a pastor.
Yeah, as a pastor, what kind of formation are you given in that, in the idea of evangelizing, and any kind of takeaways from that that you might be able to share?
That's interesting, because when I want to talk, I had no business background when I became an entrepreneur, right? None. I've had to learn on the job really fast, and I've loved it. So I've really embraced it and I've loved it. That's probably why I'm successful. But there was a very key moment when I had a mind, when something shifted in my mind, because the imposter syndrome was like suffocating, right? Who's going to hire me? I did 19 years of ministry, and now they want for marketing. And there was this moment when I realized, okay, wait a second. I have said for years, the best leaders are good communicators. All I'm doing is communicating in a new way. And Christians hate it when you say this. They absolutely hate it, which is why I love to say it. But evangelism, whether it's in a faith context or evangelism for a product or a company, it's all marketing. That's what it is. When we're telling people about our faith, we're marketing our faith. That's what we're doing. So what you're asking, probably the when you're talking about brand evangelists, they could learn a lot from Christians. They could learn a lot from Mormons and from Muslims, who also have their own form of evangelism, telling people about But I mean, everything from the terrible old sales tactics from door to door evangelism, where you nod and then they start to nod with you. That's crap. That we've said for years that if you really want to genuinely engage somebody about faith, you've got to actually get to know them first. That works for brands too. You've got to actually sit down across the table from people. You've got to lean in. I wrote an email this week for my subscribers. It'll go out on Thursday. I told the story about a boy I once took out. He was grade six and in tons of trouble, always in tons of trouble. And what I found was I could spend 1 hour with him and modify his behavior for 2 weeks if I would do something. And what I would do is I would lean forward when I was talking to him and I would tell myself internally, you are the most important person in the world right now. You are the most important person in the world right now. And as I did that, I would lean forward and my eyes would light up and I'd listen more deeply. If we could teach people to care, if I believe that my faith would add value to your life, and that's why I want to tell you about it. I believe that my job, what I sell, would add value to your life also. If I believe that there's real value in what I sell, and I had better believe that, otherwise I shouldn't be selling it. And I have to treat people with that level of kindness and importance and individuality and uniqueness. I think that would be a huge thing. And it's just so brilliant, the videos, the bomb, and all that. When you get in front of people and then you get this, I can't remember what the psychological effect is, but this effect of being known. I had this thought the other day that me and Adam Sandler would probably be really good friends. And because I was watching his acceptance speech for whatever Mark Twain prize he won. And it's so dumb to even think that. But the reality is I see his face all the time on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I actually have this illusion of a friendship with this actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the power of video. It allows you to present yourself authentically. It communicates importance and personality. Yeah. Yep.
I love it, man. I think the term, I don't know if this is the term that you're looking for, but for me, term is, it's called propinquity, right? It's like this idea of feeling familiarity based on having seen somebody so many times and developing that like unilateral relationship. I very much agree with that, man. And I love what you just said, this idea of understanding that you can change somebody's behavior if when you are listening to them, you make them feel like they're the most important person in the world. That was an absolute game changer for me in my career as well, right? Like in my early 30s was that moment when I realized, when I made that switch of trying to be the coolest guy in the room to trying to make you feel like the coolest guy in the room. And that at the end of the day, it became very clear that my Jim Carrey shtick had a shelf life and that I would have to figure out how to add value another way. And it's one of the biggest reasons why I do podcasts. Right? Like the idea of giving somebody a stage and listening to them and trying to help them explain their message in the best way possible and asking clarifying questions and inserting a little bit of conflict in it so they can answer it in a way that really tees them up to overcome the objection that's happening in the viewer's mind already is to me the most powerful networking relationship building tool that I've ever uncovered. And I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show, but I have an onboarding call with everybody. And in the onboarding call, it has three steps, right? And I always start off with, hey, these calls generally have these like three things. One is to get you really comfortable and like understand so you know what you're getting into and make sure that you know what you do, like that you feel good about it, then tell you what I think is the best way to make you look as good as possible, and then shoot some content that we can promote the show. And as I'm doing phase one, I'm like going through the idea that it's a live show and that you're going to get this panelist invite and that I do it on Mondays and blah, 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 blah. But I always end that piece with, I want you to know that my number one goal in this interview is that you walk away from this thing feeling like you sounded and looked so good that you're going to want to use this podcast as a way to introduce yourself to people. That is my number one goal, is to make you look as good as possible than anybody's ever made you look. And that's what I'm here to do. Not any kind of long form testimonial, not anything like that. This thing is for you.
There you go. I publish this stuff because it's too good not to publish it. And really, it's an invite to you. Go into the show notes, click on the tinyurl.com/B2BCB2023. and join us one of these days. Just throw it on your calendar and we'll invite you to whatever is interesting to you. You can come for the interview, stick around for the open mic, or just come for the open mic. It usually starts around 5:30 Eastern. Hope to see you there.